is amazing!
Oh, I have so many thoughts and unsolicited opinions!
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 460 for the week of May 22nd, 2023. I am best dude forever, David T. Cole, and I'm here with butt shelf, Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm getting a hardcover.
Rather fresh Puma, Tara Ariano.
These bad boys are limited edition.
And internet commenting noob, John Ramos.
That's a raw spicy meatball.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Extra Hot Grape. Before we get into talking about Clone High with our guest, John, we have a quick Patreon update, which is we have reached the next milestone. So that means new stuff.
Yay. New stuff.
We've got for you the EHG soundboard / ringtone collection. It's not available quite yet, but this is going to be downloadable MP3s of sound drafts we use in the show. Say, for instance, you want your phone always to ring with this.
I was all of history's great acting robots. Acting unit 0.8, Thespomat, David Duchovny.
Well, that could happen because you could just grab it and then stick it on your phone and suddenly that's your ringtone, weirdo. We've also got three of these. This is one of our Ford shared quarterly segments, as we're calling them, which means this would happen once a year. And in the fullness of time, if we reach our other milestones, there's three other segments along the same lines. Three of these is a three-episode deep dive on a particular show or actor or genre or concept. The first one I will be doing, I haven't decided on a subject yet, but I've narrowed it down to two things. It's very exciting, so look for that announcement soon on what's going to go on there, and that'll drop as separate episodes from even the extra, extra hot grade, sort of like bonus material. And then finally, this campaign goal means we are starting 15 seconds of fame. We'll read your well wishes, your clip requests. You just want to hear something you haven't heard in a long time. You know, give me that. Who will fight me? Sure.
No problem. Who will fight me?
There you go. There's your 15 seconds of fame. Go to Patreon or the @EHG podcast channel on Discord for the link. There's a form. You can already fill it out. As long as it can be done within 15 seconds, you can have it happen on air. Well, within reason. I don't want to make a blanket statement like that because you guys sometimes are gross and weird. Okay. That is it for our Patreon update. Thank you so much for your support. It's super exciting every time we get to add new stuff to the lineup. The the extra, extra hot, great show is getting weird and crazy. And I look forward to it every week. Thank you again, guys.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. Sitting here patiently. He is our guest, a film producer and bridge professor you've heard with us many times before. It's John Ramos. Welcome, John!
Welcome, John!
Thank you, guys. So nice to be here for this revival.
Yes, very important. So let's get into it. We are talking about the new season of Clone High. Way, way back in the 1980s, secret government employees dug up famous guys and ladies and made amusing genetic copies. In the early 2000s, those clones were sexy teens, learning, loving, sharing, judging, but then events caused the normal course of their lives to be frozen in place. 4 years later, a whole new bunch of clones were born and started high school, and as they approach graduation, the Board of Shadowy Figures hatches a new nefarious plan overseen by Candide Simpson, voice of Krista Miller, and involving thawing out the original clones and tossing them back into the mix at good old Clone High. Excuse me, they are thawing out most, but certainly not all of the original clones. One in particular, still in the old freezer. So two episodes dropped this week. Those are the only ones that are not still under embargo. Supposedly the plan is for two episodes to drop every Thursday starting June 1st. That was also supposed to have been the plan with the other two, and it did not occur. So who knows? Watch your app, I guess. Anyway, let's do the Chen check-in. John, should our listeners watch the new season of Clone High?
With a butt that is confined to the first episode, absolutely.
Great note, Sarah.
Yeah, based on the first two, totally.
Dave.
I wasn't as hot on it. I think there's a couple episodes that capture season one madness, but overall I was a little disappointed, but I'm not angry I watched it. So I don't know what that is. That's an on the edge yes, I guess, for me.
If you never watched the first season, which is now on Max, not HBO Max.
Guys, HBO Max is now Max.
It's now Max. If you never watched the first season, try that first.
Yes.
Because this is season two, obviously, is not where to start, even though it's a big hard reset of the story. But yeah, I'm with Dave. I think it gets going at the end, and I hope they get a chance to make more. Let us talk about the episodes we are free to discuss. John, this is a show I believe we force-fed you on a visit to our house in Toronto in the early mid-2000s.
We did that a lot. We were very pushy with TV back then.
That's how I came to it, for sure.
Yeah, I think I was one of the people who was, force-introduced, so to speak. Not that I was complaining.
Hey, John, what do you want for dinner? But first, watch this. I'm so hungry, though. I don't care.
Was there a character, John, you were most excited to see again, and did you feel that the new season did right by that character?
JFK, and yes. You know, for people in our position, this reboot has, an interesting path forward, I think. You know, in some ways it has more to prove, in some ways it has less. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to hook us on the world.
Right.
But it has to be very funny while still having some comment on the world that it's situated in, which it did in season one. It was, it focused on tropes and relationships, basically, right?
Yeah.
So, JFK, to me, is a character who changes a little bit. You know, he's still the same guy, but he surprises you in a couple of ways. Like, he's very sweet with Joan, who he's paired with now. Mm-hmm. I love, too, the evolution. Like, he's basically Teflon in this new, updated world. You know, Abe, in the first episode, runs into a lot of trouble. JFK has no problem coasting through it. People are like, we love you. You're sex positive. You know, all his innuendo is not a problem, right? I like that little small amount of emotional development with him, but ultimately, I just want more JFK all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's what she said. Sarah, same question.
I actually was the most excited to reunite with Dave's favorite and mine, Cinnamon Scudworth. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that was as well done. Mm-hmm. There wasn't enough Mr. Butler-tron for me in the early going. But I think that I was willing to grade this on a curve of it being very much for people like us on this panel who can recite entire episodes from memory and just randomly lines of dialogue pop up, and nobody on this panel is capable of saying the word makeover one time. Makeover. Mm-hmm. I still have that shirt, by the way.
Nice.
So sometimes there were aspects of it that weren't quite, it was like a strong B+ versus the A that most of season one was. Mm-hmm. But then occasionally there would be that very clever internet screen name, or that Cancellation Corner had Mr. Sheepman and Marilyn Manson in it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That made it worthwhile. But the fact is, I don't think it's ever going to be possible to capture that sui generis, unique, zany energy that season one had.
Yeah.
Totally, and be fresh about it. But I think they did the best they could do under the circumstances. But it was nice to see these characters again and to, to realize that it's been all this time and that the first season still is great. Like, I rewatched that also. And
yeah, me too.
It's so good. So Scudworth and his just nonstop screeching and self-owning just never gets old to me. And I was happy to see him again in his giant sombrero.
It's, yes. His opsec sombrero. Before I throw to Dave, I'll agree. The Scudworth that we get, it feels like it's dumb to say neutered. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they had to create a new character for Krista Miller because she was not going to be voicing Cleopatra anymore for very good reasons, it feels like it feels like that character is unnecessary. Like, Scudworth does not need help to foil his plans. He will foil them on his own. That's his whole
exactly.
thing. Dave,
exactly.
Dave, what are your thoughts about the character that you wanted to see the most?
Oh, well, yeah, Sarah's right. Scudworth and paired with Mr. Butler-tron was always my favorite part of the first season. But overall, I just feel like a lot of the characters are just a little neutered, I guess is a fine word to use. Like, Scudworth does have nothing really functional to do in the second season except get burnt a lot by stuff. And it's, his mannerisms are still very funny and contagious, but he's not at the center of the Machiavellian goings on. And I think that was a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I know it's stupid to talk about a plot about a TV show about clones, a cartoon that way, but I think it actually does make a difference. Yeah. There is a missing sense of chaos in the second season. And I don't mean just like the ultra violent stuff they stick in the first and second season, mm-hmm. but just like the sense of manic energy is not quite there. And some of it is the characters they've introduced. Like there's a Harriet Tubman character, but like she doesn't really bring anything too new to the table as far mm-hmm. as like what archetype she represents in yeah. sort of mm-hmm. the teen drama universe. Like her and Cleo are very similar characters, and Cleo now new voice, but she's been sort of backburnered on the script side of things. JFK isn't quite as loud and crazy, and I have to say Gandhi not being there as an agent of chaos makes a huge difference as far as like yeah. how like kinetic yeah, the show feels. Mm-hmm. And they write him out. They don't totally ignore him as far as the script goes. They do give you know very stupid reason why he's not there. Mm-hmm. And they highlight it in one of the very first scenes of the show. But there is something about this second season that doesn't feel as wild, like a wild hare, mm-hmm. as the first one. And I do miss that until right near the end of the season where I feel like, oh, I'm watching season one again. There's the last couple episodes and I guess they're embargoed, so we can't talk about them. But
right.
there is one that's a concept-y kind of thing that was really well done. Mm-hmm. And I usually don't go for that kind of thing where it's like, look what we can do with the format.
Yeah.
But this one totally worked on me. And then the finale I thought was very good. And it felt like the finale of season one again. So I would say like I'm in B territory till the end of the season. And then it gets into A territory. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it felt like season one was very, very grounded in what if Dawson Creek, but everybody's clones?
Yes.
Yeah. And
this one, I feel like, doesn't have a similar grounding. Like, mm-hmm. it seems like a lot of it is, I don't want to say apologizing for the first one, but a lot of it's a commentary on where we were 20 years ago
yeah.
with a lot yeah. of this stuff versus mm-hmm. now. And I feel that's appropriate to address, but maybe too much. Mm-hmm. I feel yeah, like maybe. They should have, like, acknowledged it and then moved on with a grounding that was their own.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like some of it is sort of like falling in that sort of euphoria take on teen mm-hmm. stuff right now. With a lot of it isn't. And it felt like they knew the setting, but not the grounding sometimes for the
yeah.
second season.
Yeah.
I should say before we move on from Gandhi, because people may not remember these headlines from literally 20 years ago, but part of the reason that the show got canceled the first time is that over 100 people in India, once they found out about this portrayal of Gandhi on the show, which is as like, as the character explicitly says, a party animal because he has not been able to like live up to his clone father, as the term goes. 100 people in India went on a hunger strike to protest it. And so MTV was like, this is heat we do not want. And yeah. you get it. But I think we're all sort of talking around as John already alluded, the first episode. So earlier this year, we talked about the revival of Party Down, another show that returned after a very long hiatus, also with an episode that largely was about the ways that comedy norms have changed since prior seasons were first on. And so I get that, you know, neither of these shows can just pretend all of that is not part of their story, but would we have preferred that they dispense with it like even faster than they did? Because that's kind of like what the whole first episode is about. And John, I think this is yeah, what you were alluding absolutely. To in your Chen check-in.
Maybe you can't get around addressing cancel culture at all, but mm-hmm. like, you know, for one, like, even though Abe was like alternatively a lovelorn and clueless loser for most of season one, yeah. you know, his big heart was a driver of the story. So turning him into like a yelly incel in the first episode is, you know, and who literally says, who even knows what to say anymore uh-huh. is like a little jarring, you know?
Yeah.
And then the Gandhi thing again, like, I think it's bothersome. It feels like what they did was just basically show a shot of him in the icebox still for no explained reason. Mm-hmm. Was either too much of a cop-out or too little.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to go that route, I would have just liked the Poochie title card, like Gandhi died on his
planet. Yes.
Yeah, seriously.
And then as far as the character of Topher Buss, you know, frontlining a character who has assumed a new identity because his original clone was canceled mm-hmm. makes it seem like they're going to have to address the issue again. And I am not looking forward to that.
And if you haven't watched yet, that's Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, I've only watched four episodes, but yes, Topher Bus, short for Christopher Columbus.
Mm-hmm. Well, and who is realized as functionally the same as Van Gogh was in the first
exactly.
season.
Like, he almost looks the same. Yeah,
yeah. So. Promote Van Gogh. It's not that hard.
Yeah, I mean, to me, again, like, I mean, we've said it already, but the show is best when it focuses on relationships and pokes fun at tropes and is just dark and weird, right? And cancel culture, I mean, A, they're late to market on this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been around for a while. And if you're going to throw social media into the mix, like, if you're not the other two or the boys, like, what are we doing here? You're just going to look amateur. Right.
It's, so, yep.
I wish they had just like completely footnoted this and just, and just started in with the weirder stuff, which to me, like, each of the episodes was a little bit stronger than the previous ones of the ones I've seen. So that made me feel good about it. But yeah, that first episode was woof for me. But
Sarah?
I think part of the problem there is, first of all, you have the same creative team who are now, like, it's middle-aged people who are sort of like, well, I guess we have to address this. But then the way that they chose to do it is acting like we were frozen this whole time and not the clones. Like, you could have just stopped with that time lapse of Scudwerth's "we didn't start the fire" 6-hour video presentation. Like, we've been here the whole time. We don't need to be reminded about iPhones. Like, so yes, that was an issue. But once that was done, I think Dave is right that the problem is they needed to pick a satirical framework and not just like get bogged down in everything that changed. And here's some, you know, less cancel prone clones to use and stuff like that. Like, that's all fine. But there is that antic energy that from a creative team that's now 20 years older, as we all are, it does feel a little more careful than it did before, when people were constantly being beheaded and they were talking peanuts in a film festival. Like, it's just not...
Careful with the nail gun, Jesus.
Lord and Miller, who created the original series, they created it when they were in college. Like, they were barely older than the characters when this show was first conceived. And, like, they're not only older, but they're also, like, so powerful now. Like, they made the Lego movie. They directed the 21 Jump Street movies. Like, they've, you know, they've really come a long way since this show was first on. And we'll put it in the show notes, but they had a very good website, like, way ahead of its time around when the show was first on in 2002 and 2003. And you can still find it on the Wayback Machine, but there's so many tidbits about, like, the making of the show. And I wonder about the pieces that were missing. Like, where is the, like, Neil Flynn voiced so many just incidental characters, some of them clones, some of them not, most famously the janitor, because he, you know, played the janitor on Scrubs, and that was like kind of a nod to that, because Bill Lawrence is the third creator of the show. But
well, there's a ton of characters they show from the first season, but they don't utilize at all. Like, we talked about Van Gogh, he doesn't talk. Caesar's there, he doesn't talk. Jesus is there, he doesn't talk. There's tons of characters that could be part of the mix in the same way that they were in the mix in season one, but they don't use, so it feels a little smaller as well.
This is part of my issue with it, is that we get these new clones, and we've sort of alluded to some of them already. Harriet Tubman is now voiced by Io Adeboye from The Bear. We didn't say, but Mitra Johari now voices Cleopatra. And then we've got Confucius, who's voiced by Kelvin Yu, and then Frida Kahlo, who's voiced by Vicky Martinez. Neil Casey voices Topher Bus. I feel like there's too many characters now. Like, I feel like part of that, like, there is maybe why Cleopatra has been sort of sidelined. It's because it's hard to just do stories for as many of the new characters that we have. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Dave that Harriet Tubman is, like, the least well-realized of all of them. Like, I think Adeboye does a good job with what she's given. But there is, like, there's no characterization to it, either, like, in concert with or in reaction to the original Harriet Tubman. Like, later in the season, we see her arguing with someone about, like, don't you want it? Don't you have ambition? Don't you want to run a company someday? And it's like, what? That has absolutely nothing to do with, like, either version of the character. Like, where did this come from?
Yeah, she feels very sidekicky to Frida Kahlo to me. Which, like, if you're not going to spend any time building up the sidekick relationship, it's kind of like, why is she here?
Yeah, Kahlo's the best new character.
Agree.
Like, they're actually giving her stuff to do. She has a point of view, and it's something different from what we've seen from OG characters.
Yeah.
That worked for me. Confucius, I feel like, is very shallowly written character. Mm-hmm. He is basically...
Dave, when I saw Confucius, how they drew him, the first lines, I was like, he's got zazz.
he's just like, he's insecure internet bro, and that's kind of like all he does. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a little, like, they need to take two things off before they stepped away from the mirror.
Yeah.
Character-wise, yeah.
But in terms of like how the storytelling has also changed since the first season, I think part of it is like, I mean, we already mentioned Dawson's Creek, and on that website that I already alluded to, they explicitly say it was an homage to Dawson's Creek season one. Mm. And now it's like there's nothing in the monoculture that is as recognizable. Yeah. And especially, like, they could also do the thing, you know, the hands pulling apart in the opening credits in season one, where it's like that was a nod to 90210 opening credits. And now it's like there's nothing like that for people our age that we're going to get about teen shows now. But there's also no teen show that everyone is watching except, like, Euphoria. And if you're not going to do it the way that Saved by the Bell from Peacock did in season one, like, you kind of need to not bother. So I feel like that's also hampering what they're trying to do here, personally.
There is something in every episode that I thought was amusing, but I will say I didn't really laugh a lot like it did in season one until the end of the season. So I guess, like, my advice is, if you did really enjoy season one like we did, and it was also like the reason why we were always going to bat for Clone High historically on this podcast. It was just one of those shows from the era where you could still make people discover things for the first time. Like, I don't know what this is. I had no idea this existed. You're showing it to me for the first time. I can no longer get it. These were all things that when we were showing it to people were true.
Yes.
Like, it just died. It just completely fell off the earth. And like, we were like, you know, singing his praises and showing everybody. And it was like very viral, slow, but it was that sort of show. So we had this like weird motherly connection to the show, you know, where we're like, hey, you know, love it and it will grow. So, you know, I think maybe we're harsher critics of season two than maybe it deserves.
I'm sure.
But I'm saying if we're a big fan of season one, stick with it to the end. And if they get a season three, sidebar, they won't. But if they do, hopefully we continue from the last two episodes. So they thought they were gold.
Yeah.
Dave, season three will premiere in 2044.
Yeah, on Axe. It is time to go around the dial talking about what we've been watching on TV recently. Our first stop, as always, is with Tara.
Well, let's talk about the show that I've been recommending to everyone within texting distance of me. It is Primo on Freevee. Rafa is a high school junior living in San Antonio with his single mother, Drea. Rafa also has five uncles, and they are a lot. Jay is stubborn, thinks he knows best about everything. He also involuntarily chokes up whenever he says or thinks about his beloved wife, Denise, and how lucky they are to have each other. Mondo is new agey and thinks that eating natural penicillin from moldy bread has saved him from ever having any infection, though when he claims it, Rafa happens to know he has had lots of infections. Ryan is an account manager at a local bank branch with lots of ideas of moving up in the world, like making playlists of motivational speakers instead of music. Rolly is the dumbest one and gets arrested for fighting a lot. Mike was in the army. It's still a very big part of his personality. The first time you see him with his sunglasses all the way on the back of his head and just like the stems visible on the front, you're like, oh, okay, got it. As I said, it's on Freevee. This is Amazon's ad-supported platform. You do not need to subscribe to anything to watch it. It is Freevee. But it was originally developed for ABC. It feels like a network sitcom in the best way, like Abbott Elementary does, which I said in my review, which I will link in the show notes, that it's too bad they weren't twinned on a schedule, because they are like a perfect lead in, lead out, but has a lot of jokes. Although it's made to appeal to potentially everyone, it doesn't feel like it's dumbed down to the lowest common denominator. It is smart. It's also a family sitcom in the best way. There are sweet moments, but never more of those than gags. And for example, in episode 4, the family sets out to resolve a dispute using Game Champ, a multimedia, multi-format game they have created together out of all the other games, plus some cards of their own devising. Dave, please play my clip.
Sudden death, this or that speedrun. One of you is dead.
What's the category?
Actor or disease. You have 1 second to answer. The first wrong answer loses. Mike, Primo, Drea. That's the order. Are you ready?
Got it.
Here we go. Cumberbatch.
Actor.
Zika.
Disease.
Waititi.
Actor.
Fishburne.
Actor.
Ventimiglia.
Actor.
Ebola.
Disease.
Vitiligo.
Actor.
Wrong. Vitiligo is a disease, dummy.
Vitiligo is the guy from Lord of the Rings, dummy.
No, that's Viggo Mortensen, not Vitiligo Mortensen. You're out.
Bye.
There's so much more of the game. That's just the quickest part.
I love that game.
It's so great.
The grand tradition of games of chaos. Yeah. That is a fantastic one. But like, just the details, like, it has grown over time. Quick background. When we all used to live in Toronto with Tara's sister, we would play Bunko. I don't know if you're familiar with Bunko.
Yes.
But we kept on adding rules to it every time.
We did.
And so by the 10th time we played it, there was like Bunko rules plus 9 more things you had to do. Mm-hmm. Like if certain things happened, you had to rub your belly and tap your head and say certain things. And it was that, but like 10,000 times more for this game. And the props they use, like there's all the cards, but they're like appropriately worn and stuff. But they also have like their book of rules. And their book of rules is pages that have obviously been ripped out of a spiral notebook one by one. And they still all have the like the weird vestiges along the holes and stuff like that. Like it's props to the prop person. Because I thought that was like so lived in and correct.
Yes. Yeah. When they start, they're like, Mondo, you spin the pregnancy test. Whatever reason that's spinner. Anyway, the other thing I highlighted in my review is the easiest thing would be for the mom to be like a nothing character who is just like, guys, all the time, like in every shitty sitcom. Mm-hmm. But she's not. And especially in the Game Champ episode, you really see her like getting into it and being crazy and in a way I won't spoil, but that was really, really funny.
This show is so good.
It's so good.
The writing, it is flying under the radar. So
it's getting a lot of attention. It's gotten a lot of reviews.
It is genuinely funny.
It's great.
Like, I laugh more in the first episode than I did the whole season of Clone High.
For sure.
It's really good.
So yeah, Shea Serrano created it. This is his first show ever. He used to be a writer on Grantland and The Ringer, and it's co-EP'd by Mike Schur of The Office and The Good Place and many other shows. So I also, in my review, highlighted that the chemistry among all of the family members is like what the show rests on. If you didn't believe that they were a family, it would not work. And like, none of them is a really big name. The only one I've ever heard of before is Christina Vidal, who plays the mom, Drea. But like, if they had just stacked this with, you know, more famous people, it would not work. And the casting is note perfect for every single one of them. It's great.
I have a question for you. Super minor spoiler. So I think you're okay.
Okay.
There is a running joke with the army guy who owns this irrigation company that he keeps on changing his van. Does the van keep on changing throughout the series, or does it stick with the one that we've seen in episode 2 or 3?
No, it sticks with the last one that we see. Right. But he's the army guy and the irrigation guy are two different guys. The army guy is Mike. The irrigation guy is Jay. Jay just seems like he was in the army because he's very stern.
That's right. You're right. Yeah. No, you're right. That's exactly why I made that mistake.
And both of those actors DM'd me on Instagram after my review went up and were like, thank you so much. The guy who plays Jay was like, I read it to my wife and she cried. And it was like, wow. So everyone really feels very emotionally connected to the show, and they should. It's great. Please watch it so they get to do another season, because I love it so much. There's only 8 episodes. They're all out to stream. Please stream them on Freevee. Yes, Dave.
Tiny triumph. Tara's writing makes people cry.
Yes.
John, what do you have for us?
Okay, so Mrs. Davis wrapped up its first season last week, and I know it's been discussed on the podcast, but you guys, the show is bananas. I am so glad that Tara watches it too, so she can give her take, but I was trying to think how to describe even the experience of watching it. It definitely has Monty Python sensibilities, and not just because the Holy Grail is involved, but for me, the closest analog I could think of to the experience of getting into the show was watching the first few episodes of the first season of American Horror Story. It's like, okay, you turn one corner and there's a guy who may or may not be Evan Peters in a gimp suit, and then Dylan McDermott is jerking it in broad daylight in the middle of the living room. And then there's a weird lady in a rocking chair, and some, none, or all the people may be dead. This is the kind of, you know, unmooring sensibility that I had watching the first few episodes. Eventually, the rules of the universe kind of come to light. There was just this delightful sense of not having any idea what was going on. I was felt that way when I was watching, let's say, like Under the Skin or even Everything Everywhere All at Once. Yep. But this show is lighter in tone, way funnier, even though it does tackle questions of not just religion, but also belief and faith with an AI component thrown in. Also, I adore Betty Gilpin. Mm. I love Elizabeth Marvel, who plays Gilpin's character, Simone's mother. But Jake McDormand is currently king shit of Dealmaker Mountain
yes!
for me.
Yes.
I was one of 3 to 4 people who watched the TV adaptation of Limitless. And he's had me basically ever since. What we do in the shadows only confirmed what I already knew.
Yep.
Describing the plot of Mrs. Davis is kind of beside the point. You have to go into the world with an open mind, and I'd give it 3 episodes and then I think you'll know. It's kind of time to say this out loud, and not just because of the show. It's worth getting a Peacock subscription.
Hell yeah. Worth 100% agree. Dave and I watched the whole season. We also loved it. I will not spoil the ending except to say it was wildly satisfying.
Yeah.
And they are submitting as a limited series, which we know that means
I'm
nothing.
I'm fine. The show is done.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. I don't need there to be more.
It should be done.
Yes.
I'm not sure where they would even go.
Yeah. Do something else. Get the same creative team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Spin up a new world. Have at it.
Part of the reason I wouldn't want to see another one is just because I won't spoil it, but like when Betty Gilpin's character learns what is actually going on, she literally stares and is like, that is so dumb.
Yes.
It is. It's just so satisfying. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
After that whole season. So
yeah, 100%. What do you have to plug?
Just my, well, Twitter. I don't know if it'll still exist by the time this airs tomorrow. But my handle is Couch Baron, CouchBaron on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me there.
Sarah, what have you been watching?
I have been watching Happy Valley. The show is back after 7 years for a third and final season. That season already aired in the UK. So if you live in / have flown to England, you know, the show is still great. I got screeners ages ago, but I am watching one at a time per week on terrestrial TV like a civilian sucker, because this is one of those household shows that we both watch, and watching ahead is unwise vis-a-vis marital politics. In any event, if you are not familiar, Happy Valley is a crime drama set in Yorkshire. It stars Sarah Lancashire of Julia as uni cop Catherine Kaywood, James Norton as her murderous nemesis, and not coincidentally, father of her grandson, Tommy Lee Royce, Siobhan Fennerin of Downton, and Con O'Neill of literally everything else. But since John is our guest today, let's go with Of Bedrooms and Hallways as her sister and her sister's partner, respectively, and a number of the other, hey, it's that Inspector Linley compromised vicar actors that tend to show up in these shows. Of course, Happy Valley was created by Gentleman Jack's Sally Wainwright, but it's because of Happy Valley that I watch every single thing Wainwright creates, even if it seems like it's not going to be for me. And every single thing Sarah Lancashire is in as well, because she's brilliant. This long gestating third season of Happy Valley's inciting incident is perhaps a bit contrived, but that was also true of the previous season. Rhys Khanna as Catherine's grandson, whose relationship with his biological father is the plot engine here, is not a natural, let's say, all the time, but it is the same actor who played Ryan as a child when the series started, so that naturalistic but clunky way Khanna and Lancashire have with each other papers over a lot of awkward line readings. Also, you can't necessarily tell when a line reading is awkward on this show because the Yorkshire accents are very thick. It does take you a while to get acclimated. It always takes us like a full episode to sort of get back into the rhythm of it. Don't be a hero, just turn on the captions. And Norton S. Royce is such a maddening, selfish scumbag. Like, it's such a pitch-perfect performance. The show is really, really good. The entire series is only 18 episodes, and BBC America is running all the old ones and probably has them on demand if you still have cable. They're also available on Acorn and AMC+. The shit is grim. It is respectful of middle-aged, blue-collar people's stories and substance misuser stories. It doesn't try to make Kaywood into Robert Gorin, but it is grim. It's sometimes almost too sharply observed as a slice of difficult life. As my esteemed colleague Tara would say, this is definitely some broad daylight TV, but The conclusion of the story also means that Lancashire is now free to go back to making a gazillion more seasons of Julia. I love that show. Like, it's a family member and actually want to live in it if I'm being real about things. But anyway, Happy Valley, it's airing each Monday at 10 p.m. on BBC America and in other places as well. We will link them in the show notes. On a lighter note, we are wrapping up the seventh season of Queen in Full. That's where Jeb Lund and I march grimly, speaking of things that are grim, through every single thing on Dennis Quaid's televisual CV. Coming up this week, as you're listening to this, our very own David T. Cole is appearing on episode 9 to talk about G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra. We thank him very much for his sacrifice. You can find that wherever you get podcasts, and you can follow us on Twitter, should it still exist. I feel like we've been saying this for like 6 months. Quaid in Full Pod.
Can I just tease one of the lines from this episode?
Yes, please.
Why does Mr. Quaid look like a zucchini boat?
All right.
All right, coming up right here on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday, it is FUBAR. Arnold Schwarzenegger is finally doing a TV show. Yay! And then also Ask ESG. Of course, we've got Not Quite Winners and Losers of the Week. And the extra credit topic is the new metadata. 30 pieces of metadata we'd like to see about TV shows on IMDb. Mm-hmm. That is available to supporters. Mm-hmm. Go to extrahotgreat.com/club to read about everything you could get if you join the club today. And then right here on EHG Prime next week, we welcome back Mr. Will Hines to talk about the third season of I Think You Should Leave. Don't miss that one. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting an argument this week is Tara. Take it away, Tara.
Hello.
Hi.
I've already used the space to celebrate episodes from the first and second seasons of GLOW, the most tragic and lamented of all the COVID-canceled TV shows. Time to get to the third and final season, in which the ladies of GLOW plus Sam and Bash have relocated to Las Vegas to put on their wrestling show in a theater at the Fantan Hotel and Casino, just like the real GLOW of the mid-80s to 1990s shot at the Riviera in that very town. At the halfway point of the season, episode 5, Freaky Tuesday, issues are starting to arise. Let's discuss what makes this episode canon-worthy. Number one, gives us a classic heel turn. Near the top of the episode, the Fantan's entertainment director, former showgirl Sandy Devereaux St. Clair, played by Gina Davis, hosts an informal memorial for Bernie, the recently deceased mentor who taught her how to put Vaseline on her nipples so they'd always look amazing. She adds in passing that his daughters wouldn't let Sandy speak at the actual funeral, but why? Putting her bereavement privilege to use, Sandy tells Bash and Debbie, who are GLOW's longtime co-producers, that she would like to extend the show's run through the end of the year. Bash is about to accept immediately when Debbie cuts him off, telling Sandy they will discuss it internally. As we've already seen, Debbie badly misses her toddler son Randy back in Los Angeles and has been taking her mind off that both by, among other things, boning Chet, the hot valet, and working on an eating disorder. Staying in Las Vegas 4 times as long as she had planned is not that appealing. Bash is, perhaps, intently focusing on the potential business deal so he can ignore other aspects of his life. In the previous episode, the Fantan's female impersonator, Bobby, by the way, played by Kevin Cahoon, who is currently on Broadway in Shucked, Bobby asked Bash to produce his show, in the course of which Bobby assumed Bash and Rhonda were in a marriage of convenience due to Bash's sexuality. Bobby then quickly had to walk it back at Bash's quietly horrified reaction at being known in a way he's not ready to accept himself. So this may be why Bash is shitty to Debbie's face when she expresses reservations about Sandy's offer, and even shittier behind her back and to Sam's face. Clip one.
What do you think of that number?
Nice number.
Mm-hmm. You're looking at what you'd be making if we stuck around in Vegas for 9 more months.
Fuck. That much?
Mm-hmm. If we want this money, all we gotta do is take it.
Sandy wants GLOW to play the Fantan through the end of the year.
Wow. Okay. It's pretty enticing.
Yeah, I agree.
So help me get Debbie to come around on this thing. Together, you know? I'll be good cop, you be bad cop. She's worried about, I don't know, not being able to see her kid and the girls getting through the show, yada, yada, yada. I just say let's deal with all that later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be put in the middle.
All right, well, I'm not putting you in the middle. You'd be on my side, which is not in the middle at all.
What happened to one for all for one?
Well, it's a little bit more like two against one until we all agree for one. Come on, man. This is why I kept you around.
See, I thought you kept me around to direct.
Say, let's be honest, all right? I mean, you're on a paid vacation. But you can earn your money by being the director who agrees with the producer.
Yeah, I'm not your fucking butler, you know? You can't pay me to be your friend or to agree with you or to tell you how fantastic all your ideas are.
Yeah, that's right. Instead, I'm paying you to sit around a fucking hotel room and write another screenplay that'll never see the light of day.
You know what? Don't throw your weight around. You're not good at it.
You know what, Sam? You're lucky to have this job, and you should have my fucking back on this.
Meanwhile, Debbie is also being kind of shitty, but with a lot more plausible deniability, finding Sandy getting day drunk and obliquely trying to get Sandy to rescind the extension offer. Sandy says that if Debbie wants to be a producer, she should be prepared for what could happen if her projects are actually successful, although, to be fair to Debbie, the history of GLOW would not seem to require her to, or hadn't prior to this point. Sandy also says she may come to see the show that night. Which producer shall be victorious? We'll come back to the heel turn in a moment. For now, let's move on to number two. This episode reminds us that wrestling is sport, performance art, and business. Whether you're a dancer or a derby girl or a juggler or an NFL wide receiver, the body keeps the score. Throughout the series, GLOW has portrayed the ways pro wrestling and acting intersect, but maybe never as explicitly as this one. The episode's cold open is a straight lift from All That Jazz's It's Showtime, Folks bit, but here Tamé is standing in for Bob Fosse, or barely standing, sometimes hunched, and Motrin and Red Wine are standing in for Speed. Performing the same show night after night is wearing on Tamé past the point where hot tub sessions or an in-call massage could help her. One small sneeze throws her back out. Before the show that night, Tamé sees Don and Stacy in costume as the beatdown biddies and asks to trade roles. What might Debbie think about that, knowing Sandy is coming to the show that night? Clip two.
You know what? I'd be down to switch characters, but I'm not touching Welfare Queen.
I could switch with you.
No, we can't switch characters, okay? The costumes won't fit. It'll be a complete disaster.
Or it'll be funny.
You know what? It's the last week. Timmy's right. Let's do it. Let's shake it up.
What about kayfabe?
I'm with Carmen. Also, it's our job to do the same show. And it's through the repetition that you find out more about your character.
But if we did switch characters, I need to be Welfare Queen. She's got all the best moves, and I'm the only one besides Cherry who can play her. Because I'm half black.
You are? Oh, look at this crazy.
I knew that. Well, yeah. I got dibs on Liberty Bell.
If anyone gets Liberty Bell, it's me. It was my character first.
Give it a rest, Reggie. If anyone's capable of making Liberty Bell look good, it's me.
Quick pitch, Jewish okay, Liberty Bell.
All right, everyone settle down.
If anyone is going to play Liberty Bell, it's Ruth.
Oh, really?
Yes, and I am going to play Zoya.
No one bothers to warn Bash ahead of time that any of this is happening, so he is completely thrown when this new version of Zoya directly involves him in her routine, clip three.
Darlings, please, hit me all you want. I am cold and heartless like a frigid Siberian tundra.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I feel nothing for you capitalist idiots, except maybe a pity for inevitable decline. Let's see, what would scare you? A museum! Book without pictures! Okay. And you... Hello. You, him. Very nice permanent hair treatment.
Thank you.
You must be made of money. And therefore have American secrets. I can extract through acts of sexual nature. Okay. Perhaps we discuss later in a hot tub. Sorry about your bill.
If I may indulge my inner Ruth, what ensues is an example of the carnivalesque, a literary mode in which a rare and exceptional event grants characters license to flout social conventions for a period of time known to be limited. In this case, the wrestlers only have 4 days left in the show, they think. So everyone is getting into the carnivalesque spirit and exploring what they're actually capable of as artists. And no one gets more into the spirit than Sheila, who doesn't feel inspired to trade costumes with anyone. This season, we've already seen Sheila pursuing acting in a more formal way by taking a class, although one that was not a great fit for her right now. Since dropping that class, she has been chatting about the craft with Bobby, which is how she ends up entering in a character Bobby's audience will already know well, clip four.
Good evening. I'm Liza. Liza Minnelli.
Holy shit.
She rolls into the ring. She's got a martini glass.
She better not rip that dress, but, you know, whatever it takes to win. That's what Liza would want.
Is that Sheila?
If I did my job right, you'll never know.
I've never seen her dressed as a human woman before.
Come on, Liza, ring them bells!
The show is almost over when Debbie finds Tamé in the dressing room, weeping because she is so stiff she can't put on her costume for the finale. Debbie tries to get Tamé to admit how long she's been suffering like this, but Tamé just sobs, "It's only four more shows!" If Tamé had been honest about her injury, Cherry or Ruth could have probably given her some useful advice about recovery, but then again, it might not have been enough. Only now has everyone shown they can pretty credibly understudy one another's roles, but could Tamé have actually gotten better knowing she couldn't really rest? The producers might be making sick money, but apparently they're not spending any of it on giving the production any margin of error. Anyway, by the time Debbie and Cherry are helping Tamé stretch after the show, Debbie is pretty sure all the chaos she helped create tanked the show for Sandy. But actually, Sandy commends them all for keeping things fresh, and then we get this, clip five.
Well, we did want to have some fun since, you know, we're on our way out.
Well, not so fast. Actually, Sandy, we've got good news. We would love for Glow to stay in Vegas for the rest of the year.
I'm so happy. From death, new life. Mm.
Wait, so we're staying?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the rest of the year?
Okay, let's just slow down on the announcements and celebration here. We haven't even had a meeting about this. Actually, Sam, we did have a meeting. I told you and I told Debbie. And we don't need a meeting to know that I'm the only one who cares about keeping the show alive.
No. You actually care about jugglers and magicians and whatever fucking shiny-buttoned faux producer wants a piece of your time. You sacrifice absolutely nothing for this show.
Okay, Debbie, here's the truth. Nobody wants to tell you, but here it is. It's my name on the marquee, not yours, which means it's my show, paid for with my money, which makes this my decision. And if you don't like it, feel free to get the fuck out.
Maybe we should move this meeting.
No, we don't need to move it anywhere. Ladies, we will be extending our run here at the Fantan. If that doesn't work for you, feel free to go back to Los Angeles. But Glow is staying in Vegas. Cheers.
And there's the payoff for that heel turn. Through the first two seasons, we've watched the titular gorgeous ladies learn, among other things, how to wrestle, how to perform wrestling, how to put on a TV show. They even learned the hard way how intellectual property law works. They've learned that when you seem to be leg-locked in circumstances that seem hopeless, there's always an escape. And when a tag team match seems to be ending in victory, that actually means it's time for one partner to turn on the other and win all alone. We knew Bash was a student of the sport when we met him. We may not have believed that he could stand the wrestlers that Sam cast while also believing any of them is replaceable, but it turns out he is his Republican mother's son after all. And the performance he just saw did nothing to change his mind despite all of the versatility and virtuosity his cast brought to it. Number three, it touches on legitimate concerns about the show's take on race. Racial stereotyping was very much a part of pro wrestling in the mid-80s era that Glow portrays. We have seen characters of color in the show push back against getting cast as gangster rappers or terrorists based on their ethnic background and correct ignorant assumptions about themselves. But while the part switching in this episode is mostly fun for everyone, it also highlights the limitations that chafe some performers of the show within a show, and in one particular case, leads to wildly inappropriate choices. Clip six.
Oh my god, why is she doing that voice?
Isn't that the same voice you do?
No, it's not. It's not the same voice, Sheila, okay? She's a white girl doing that voice.
The script for this episode is credited to Marquita Robinson, a queer Black woman who also wrote Work the Leg in season two. After GLOW was unrenewed in the fall of 2020, Sunita Mani, who plays Arthi, a.k.a. Lebanon, shared a letter that she and several other women of color in the cast had sent to producers during the George Floyd protests, expressing their concerns about the show's tendency toward tokenism with its characters of color and calling out the lack of people of color in key positions behind the scenes. According to the letter, there were not any people of color in the season four writer's room. Mani shared on social media that producers had been receptive to this critique and were acting on them. So Netflix's decision not to give those producers the chance to do better in the final season is yet another reason to hold a grudge against the company. As for season three, I appreciate that Robinson made the topic of race text in Freaky Tuesday. It gets further airing in the next episode as Jenny shares more about her background as a Cambodian refugee and why, therefore, the fortune cookie character is particularly hard for her to play. It's important that this episode, however, briefly portrays how the suspension of norms for one night only is not a carnival for everybody involved. Would this episode be better if we saw Debbie zoom into the ring on a zipline for the Fantan finale? Of course. But there is still a lot to like about this truly unique episode, so please dig your leotard out of your crotch, Debbie as Zoya style, and do that before you vote. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Tara. John, why don't you start us off as our guest today? And, of course, we can't forget your wrestling persona, the Bridge Professor.
We've got a job to sell you.
Decapitate people by throwing playing cards. So my first note in this is back problems suck.
Yes.
I felt seen at the end of the cold open where she sneezes, and that sets her off, and that is the pain catalyst for everything. Been there recently, yeah. Late. I get it.
This was interesting to revisit. You know, I admit I have not rewatched the show in some time, so some of the, you know, kind of beats of the plot of the series have faded a little bit, for sure. You know, definitely one thing that stuck out to me was that I thought it was a really daring choice to make Bash so unlikable in this episode. That's not how I remember him. And this heel turn is definitely like, you can feel it propelling, you know, some things toward the for the rest of the season. I think I did really like the moment too with even though I think Debbie and Roos' relationship obviously has pretty much normalized at this point in the series, I think it was still significant that she allowed Ruth to play Liberty Bell. You know, it felt to me so that was a nice moment. You know, again, I read a lot of the coverage, you know, in preparation for this about the, you know, racist overtones in the letter that was sent and everything. And it is subtly done here, I think. You know, I mean, not the racist overtones themselves, they're extremely stereotypical, but I think the reaction to them, it's believable for the time, I think. You know, there are a lot of great, you know, kind of metamorphosis moments, I think. This, you know, the switching of the characters, you know, Sheila, you know, kind of coming out as Liza Minnelli, you know, is a really, like, mic drop moment, I think. You know, it's been too long for me to say whether this really sticks out as a wonderful submission of this series, because I remember it pretty fondly, you know, as pretty universally good. But there are plot points in this and, you know, kind of choices that I think make it stand out from some of the rest of the stuff. So I was very happy to revisit it. And I did really like Bash's impotence during the performance that he didn't know anything about.
Yeah.
He's just like throwing in these like these frustrated comments like, why don't you tell us who you are and why you've done this?
Why you did that. Yeah. So good.
So I really enjoyed it. No.
Great.
Thank you, John. Sir.
I really enjoyed this too, unsurprisingly. Justice for GLOW, RIP. Tara is right. This is an excellent reason to hold a grudge against Netflix, and I will never drop it because this show is amazing and is always doing so many things, but without standing back for too long and letting you watch. Like, it, you know, I'm always surprised that the episodes are as short as they are, because it feels like there's much more. It feels like there's 42 minutes in a like 29 minute episode. I would vote for this just for Betty Gilpin's butt, which is amazing. It's a bit like every time it's sort of like a, you know, it's like a runner that she's digging her leotard out of her crack, but it's like, no, you're good. Leave it. This is nature doing what it's meant to do.
You could hear it in that clip when she adjusts her leotard. She's like, Jesus fucking Christ.
I mean, the most relatable. And especially having been watching her, I'm not caught up on Mrs. Davis, but I have been watching. And it's just like, when is this performer going to have that sort of cleansing burst of super famous synchronicity?
Yeah.
I think one of the things that this show does extremely well is that palimpsest of meta layers about acting, and that these performers are able to, like, these are actors who are acting as actors. And then in this carnivalesque episode, with the nod to all that jazz that, like, I had completely forgotten about that. And then as the, you know, things are piling up in the trash, I was like, oh, right. Oh my gosh. What a smart reference. And the palimpsest of all the different performances that are in play from everyone during a show is difficult to control and do well. And, like, not just the performances, but the editing and the way that we're allowed to sometimes see through a slightly thinner part of the paint to the layer below it is so impressive. And yet it never loses its, like, fond exasperation with Ruth's actor bullshit, which, yeah, like, just never, never stops. And yet her performance as Liberty Bell is like, Alison Brie is so fucking good in this show. Like, even when she's being super annoying, like, this performance is, like, bursting with, like, joy and this fully realized, like, idea that she's had about this character for so long. And you see her reacting to the crowd, responding to it, and then turning it up. And then you see Debbie reacting partly as Zoya, but also partly as, like, being happy for Ruth's version of this. Like, it's really amazing. And it's not like tricked up. So you're like, oh my gosh, what good acting it is. Like, it just sort of, like, puts the situation in front of you and lets you look at all the layers in your own time. So it was really a wonderful episode to revisit. I regret to inform everyone, including myself, that I still would with this 80s tricked out version of Marin. I don't know what it is about the show and that, yeah, mustache, but mm-hmm, pass it over here, attach it to Debbie's butt somehow. It's fine. Not sure how this is going to work. Okay. Who cares? Mm-hmm. But yeah, this was really, this was wonderful to revisit, and I wanted to just let it click over and keep watching to the end of the season. But at the same time, I didn't want to, because there will be no more Glowisodes. I remain mad, but this episode was great. And so is your presentation. Dave, take us home.
I'm just going to jump on this grenade for everybody listening. Palimpsest?
I thought it was palimpsest. It's like layers.
Oh, okay. All right. Mm-hmm. There you go, dear listeners. Another word for your vocabulary.
People can ask Siri to Google it for them. They'll be,
hey, look, we're a service-oriented podcast. Let's find out what the fuck palimpsest means. You know who I like? That George palimpsest.
Mm-hmm. A manuscript or piece of writing material on which the original writing has been effaced to make room for later writing, but of which traces remain.
Okay. Neat. All right. So I think for me, Glow is falling, in regards to the canon, is falling into that trap of a very good, very consistent show. And does the episode that we're picking in the later ones elevate itself beyond what's already there? Because at a certain point, you have to say no. Otherwise, every episode of Glow is going to end up in the canon. And that's where I'm at here. I think this episode is fun and also interesting, but it doesn't really compare canon-wise to the ones that are already in here. I understand all the arguments, but I feel like we're just at a place now for me where my Glow standard is quite high for adding more into the canon. So while I enjoyed this, I certainly enjoyed everybody playing everybody else. That was great. And, you know, Bash trying to make sense of what's going on and just giving up in front of the mic. Very good. But for me, this episode, like, isn't quite as good as the ones we've had there. So I'm probably going to say no to this one, even though obviously worth your time. Let's make this official. John Rainbow's canon worthy or not?
Well, Dave, I get your point. And I think, like, you know, some of the earlier episodes really relied a lot more on the Debbie Ruth, like, friction, basically, which has now, you know, been gotten past. So I feel like it's almost a little bit of a different show, but given what they had to work with and given the twist in doing the, you know, the switching and everything like that, I still think it's canon worthy. So I'm going to vote yes.
Sarah?
It's a da from me.
All right. So I'm going to say no, but it doesn't matter because the palimpsests have it. Palimpsest is now our Smurf, just so you know. So that means GLOW Season 3, Episode 5, Freaky Tuesday. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time to discover who is the winner and the loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
I have to say, I admire how Shark Week in latter years has embraced its campiness, and it knows it is kind of a joke and is leaning into it. For example, with my winner of the week, Jason Momoa, Aquaman himself, who is hosting Shark Week this year. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to the Sharks. I think it's a great pairing.
And loser of the week?
Yeah, I might actually watch it. Speaking of things I'm actually still watching, sigh, that don't know their jokes, Law & Order SVU is losing Molly Burnett. Molly Burnett plays one of the secondary detectives who this has just become a revolving door in the last season and a half, two seasons. I don't know what was wrong with the woman playing Kat before her. Then Giddish got basically ejected and found out about it on Twitter. And now that Molly Burnett is leaving and Giddish might be coming back. Like, guys, just, I don't know, like draw a face on a cantaloupe and put it on the desk. If you can't afford can't afford another member of the squad. I know everybody's very expensive now, but yeah, this is really weird and makes me wonder what's going on in that workplace. I await the oral history eagerly.
Speaking about things you find weird and you're wondering what's going on, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
It's game time.
Welcome back to Game Time. This is the third Game Time of the season. Tara has won the first two games, so Sarah and John are looking to get on the board this week. Today we are playing DJ Farnworth's Fresh Dope Drops from Mike, who earns himself an extra credit topic and a shirt or other item of their choice from the Extra Hot Great store found at throughmethods.com. Ooh. DJ Farnsworth dropped by today with a collection of dope mashup mixes of TV show themes. Each track mix features two different TV themes that share an actor. Your job is simple, name that actor. So you're going to hear an audio clip that's two themes sort of played at once in a DJ mix. Okay. You have to figure out what actor has a starring role in both of those shows.
Oh, damn.
If you get it without a hint, you get 3 points. If you need a hint, I will play you both themes separately. You hear them on their own, then you can guess for 1 point.
Okay.
All the actors were in the main cast of the two shows they were in for at least one season. No actor, actress, or show appears more than once in this game. No steel meals today. So let's throw it a Piggy to see who's going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, so we're going to go John, and then Tara, then Sarah. You only get one guess, so make it count. 24 questions, no challenge zones today. Are we ready to play DJ Farnworth's Fresh Dope Drops?
Yes.
Let's go.
Palimpsest.
All right, we'll start things off with John. Here we go. Here is your first mix. Name the actor common to both of the themes you hear here. So there's your mix, two themes all mixed together. There is one actor common to both those shows that starred in them. Name it now or ask for the hint.
It sounds like a mashup of 30 Rock and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And God, what the hell's her name?
Just having the same problem.
Sorry. Yeah, I see. I was confusing Jane Kays. I just sorted that. Jane Krakowski.
Jane Krakowski is the correct answer. That is worth 3 points. Tara, here is your first mix.
That is the star of both Veep and Seinfeld, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Good for 3. To Sarah for your first mix.
That is definitely the Golden Girls theme, and also Mary Tyler Moore. So that's Betty White. She's in both.
Are correct. Everybody's got full points. Back to John.
I kind of like that one.
Yeah.
That was a little too cacophonous for me to sort out. I'll take the hint.
All right, here is both those themes played separately. For 1 point, name the actor common to both those shows, represented by those two themes.
I do not know.
All right, no steel mills, but for glory, anybody
Sarah
know?
Sarah knows.
Cranston?
Bob Odenkirk. Oh, it's the other one. It's Mr. Show.
Yeah. Right. Mr. Show, Better Call Saul, with the themes we heard there. All right, back to Tara.
Yeah. Okay. It took me a second. That's How I Met Your Mother and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which means we are looking for Allison Hannigan.
You are correct. Nicely sussed.
Nice.
Good suss.
Thank you.
Good palimpsest.
I was being sus.
I already forget what the word was.
Palimps.
Palimps. Yeah, I got the palimps. All right. We are back to Sarah.
I love that nets out to like Benny Hill. Can I hear them in sequential fashion, please? That doesn't help me. H. John Benjamin? No idea.
Correct. Anybody want to take a stab at that one?
I know Parks and Rec is the second one.
Yeah. I can't place the first one, but I know
the first one is Party Down.
Party Down.
Common element is right. Adam Scott. Sure. All right, back to John.
That is insane. That's what you hear in the life before your brain blinks out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to take a swing at this one. I think this might be Justified in Deadwood. I'm going to guess Timothy Off with His Pants.
Is it Timothy Off with His Pants?
Timothy. Off with His Pants.
You are correct for 3 points. Nicely done. To Tara with question number 8.
Wow. That's Friday Night Lights and The White Lotus, which means we're looking for Ms. Connie Britton.
You are correct. Nice. All right. This one is to Sarah. It will be the last question for our first score break as we dispense with the easy ones.
No!
These are tiered.
Oh, God. Oh my God.
Here we go for Sarah D. Bunting. Give me some more time and dream. Give me the hope. Turn on steam. Somebody say.
Nope. Can I get the hint, please? Give me some more time and dream. Give me the hope to run out of steam. Somebody say we could be here. We could be rolled up out of bed in a year. Robert Guillaume.
I'll give you a hint. It's someone whose name you said in this episode.
It is. This person has been named. We were looking for from Community and BoJack Horseman, Allison Brie. Allison Brie was answer there. Good it's time for our score break, Tar.
Sarah has 3. John has 6. I have 9.
All right. Let's get into the medium difficulty questions as determined by Mike. First up is John.
That one slaps.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to take another guess of someone who has also been mentioned in this game, H. John Benjamin.
Incorrect. Anybody know this one?
Jessica Walter. Jessica Arrested in Archer.
Correct. Oh, Jessica Walter, Arrested Development and Archer, starring roles in both.
We miss her.
Tara, are you ready?
Yes.
Here you go.
I need the hint. Please play them separately. Mike's crazy for this one. That's, I think it's Hugh Laurie. Because I believe I heard Jeeves and Wooster.
Yep.
And House.
Yep. Together at last.
For 1 point?
For 1 point. Yes.
Wow.
Sarah D. Bunting, are you ready?
Yes.
Here you go.
I can't pull them apart in my head. Can I get the hint, please?
I believe you know and hate that one.
Dear Sally.
All right, there you go.
That one would actually go way better with the second Felicity theme. I hope this is Carrie Russell.
You are correct. Good for one. Back to John Ramos.
Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worrying that where they're gonna go when the whole thing.
All right, talk it out. What do you recognize there, John?
No, I'm gonna need the two.
All right, here you go. Separately.
Everybody's worrying about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done.
Both separately, name the actor for one.
No, I have nothing on this one.
Nothing on this one. Well, should we give the answer or should we let the mystery be? Ha-ha! Delicious! Tara, do you know this one?
I think it's Christopher Eccleston, right?
You are correct.
Doctor Who and the Leftovers.
Oh, shit.
First season of the Doctor Who revival and the Leftovers, the theme from after the first season of that.
Yep.
Back to Tara.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Here you go.
Doctor, what's wrong?
That's not bad.
I love this game.
Okay. I think that's Busy Phillips.
You are correct. And why is it Busy Phillips?
Nice. Well, I mean, I'm going to let you let me have it, but she was not an opening credits cast member of Freaks and Geeks, which is one of
I didn't say opening. I just, she started.
Oh,
major
okay.
player of.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Then it's, Busy Phillips of Freaks and Geeks and Girls 5 Vemba.
You are correct. All right. We are two, Sarah. Madness at the end.
I mean, I'm really tempted to guess the helicopters, but it's not. It's not that. Could I hear them sequentially, please? Because I can only hear the one. It's the banana in that mashup.
Well, the good news is, if you only know one half of the question, you only have about 10,000 people.
No
to
kidding.
From.
Yeah, seriously. Now I know her, and I just have to stall, and because it's not Lisa Moriarty.
Yeah.
Can I please get the correct pronunciation?
Palimpsest.
No, I'm sorry.
Maura.
We'll give you the points, but the correct answer was my attorney.
Oh, right.
All right, John, here you go. Next one's for you.
Okay. Love and marriage, love and marriage.
Go together like a horse and carriage. Love it.
That's good.
All right, talk it out. What are you hearing there?
Well, I mean, obviously Married with Children is one. I don't think I can pull what was underneath it, but... I feel like I have a 1 of 3 chance, basically.
Yeah.
I'll go Ed O'Neill.
Ed O'Neill is, in fact, incorrect. Oh. The other one you were hearing was Futurama. We're looking for Katie Sagal.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Modern Family also. I would have guessed the same thing.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
This is question 17.
It's Red Eagle.
It is for you. Where everybody knows your name.
I'm just going to go for it like a fucking crazy person and say this is Woody Harrelson because I was hearing Cheers plus True Detective.
You are correct.
Oh my God.
Season 1 of True Detective starring Woody Harrelson.
You're deranged. That was great, though. Nice work.
All right. This is our last question of our medium difficulty ones.
Oh,
it is for Sarah, and we'll take us into a score break. Here you go, Sarah. Music to go insane by.
Wow.
If you want to hear any of these again, you know, you just have to ask.
Oh my God.
If you dare.
I think I actually would like to hear the mashup one more time, if I may.
I just got it.
Okay, I'm hearing Taxi, and then I'm hearing something else, and that does not help me narrow it down. And I don't think that's the theme song for Numb 3, so I'm just gonna try to guess that it's Tony Danza.
It's a good guess.
No, the other one was It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, so we're looking for Danny DeVito.
Fucking my brother's school's own Danny DeVito. Fuck.
All right. We only have 2 questions left for everybody in the hard category, so let's get the scores.
Okay. Sarah has 5. John has 6. I have 16.
We... You have what?
Okay.
16.
All right.
She has palimpsest. Can we just...
It's anybody's game as we head into the angry round with John. Here you go.
I'm scared.
Thank you.
Mike, you're not a good person.
I'll take them sequentially.
Okay. Please. Sometimes when I'm alone and having trouble going to the bathroom, that's the music that plays.
Jesus.
All right. Any idea?
I couldn't hazard a guess.
No idea what any of that. Do you know the first one?
None.
You don't know what the first part of that is? You don't know what is from?
I mean, it could be one of five in his defense.
All right. Fair enough. Anybody else want to take a crack at that one?
Well, one of them is CSI, but I don't know what the
first one is. Definitely CSI.
The second one is Hannibal, so it's got to be Fishburne.
Fishburne.
Oh,
is correct.
Sarah, you're so smart.
Tara.
Yes.
Jesus.
I don't think I have either of those, but I'll hear
that's
hint.
That's like that Monkees movie.
What if I took that clip there and made that the underbed for this whole episode's game?
No, don't do
okay,
that.
Okay, play them we'll one at a time, please. Okay, I think the first one is The Walking Dead, but I have no idea what the second one is. And like, Walking Dead is another ER where there's 5 trillion people, so I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I'm gonna insist you throw one name out.
Okay, let's say Sarah Jane What's Her Nuts from The Walking Dead, and let's say the other one is Prison Break. It's definitely not. I have no idea.
I just realized at the very end you could actually hear the name of the second song.
It didn't help me, but...
Tuka and Birdie is what they're saying at the end there. That's Steven Yeun.
Okay.
So it's not Sarah Wayne Kelly?
Thank you, Sarah Wayne, not Jane.
Sarah Wayne!
Speaking of Sarah, here is your next one.
Sequentially, please. Fuck.
All right, what are you hearing?
I'm going to be mad because I know I watched the second one. The first one is like just out of reach and I can't pull it. I don't know. George Palimpsest.
Close. Is a person. We're looking for from Succession, which was the second one.
Oh.
And Spin City, which is the first one. Mr. Alan Ruck.
I was going to say David Rash because I was like, Cameron, that could be Sledgehammer for all I know. But yes, Alan Ruck.
Oh my God,
sense.
I'm exhausted.
All right, here's everybody's last question.
Okay. Thank
God.
For John Ramos.
I cannot hear what is underneath that noise, so I'm gonna go.
Creepy as hell.
You woke up the snow, got yourself gone. Your mama always said you'd be there.
So when I was putting this together and just normalizing the clips and all that kind of stuff, I treated myself to listening to them sight unseen, as it were, to try to figure out what it was. And I did very poorly in this game because I am bad at this sort of thing. But I will say, I'm going to give you an additional hint, because this is my thought process. Oh, that second bit sounds like some bullshit Dennis Leary would put in his show. It's not.
It does.
Sure does.
Not a Dennis Leary show. I'm going to give you that part.
That's a good hint.
I thought it might be Ulander, actually.
Yeah. Or like, but I was thinking, oh, that's Rescue Me or whatever. Like,
yeah, I don't know either song.
So. I'm Irish! Okay. You know what the first one is?
I don't think so. No.
You don't know what the first one is?
Whoa. Are you friends with Sarah?
Yeah. All right, Sarah, do you have any
idea? We've worked through this. I don't know the second one. First one's The Sopranos.
First one is The Sopranos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never watched. Okay. Famously, but.
Are you guys in a fight now? All right. So the second one, a little Dan Casino leaking into our game, is Rizzolian Isles.
Oh, my God.
So our common is Lorraine Bracco.
Jeez. So
this is the hard section.
Yeah.
All right, Tara, here's your last.
Yeah, okay, great.
Wow.
Fucking hell. Okay, well, one of them is Miami Vice, I think. So, oh my God, I just fucking got it. It's Miami Vice and Battlestar Galactica, so it's Edward James Olmos.
It is a three-pointer in the hard round. Nicely done.
Oh, good job.
All right, last regulation clip. It is for Sarah. Good luck, Sarah.
Wow.
That's really great to listen to, but I'm going to need you to play them for me in order, please.
There's your separate themes. Any thoughts?
That actually does not help as much as it could, which obliges me to guess Matt Frewer, which is not correct, but...
That's not bad.
Incorrect. Anybody want a guess there?
Is the second one Halt and Catch Fire?
It is.
Yes.
First one's King of the Hill.
Oh.
I still don't know. What is it, Sarah?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I would have guessed Lee Pace, but I don't know that.
Toby Huss, our good friend Toby Huss.
Oh, sure.
Common ingredient.
Sorry, Toby Huss.
Sure.
All right, let's hear the end of regulation score.
That was...
No. How about that? Sarah had finished with 5. John had 6. I had 19.
More.
So our round one scores were frozen in amber.
Yeah, mine too.
Let's play this tiebreaker. First person to shout the answer wins something good. Here we go. Reminder, it's the actor is the answer. Here we go.
Sunday, Monday, happy days.
Ron Howard.
Ron Howard is correct. Andy Griffith Show, Happy Days, mixed there to great effect. Thank you, Mike. We know that was a lot of work. That was a fantastic game. I feel a little lightheaded and a little insane after that.
And I'm sorry to tell you,
way.
We've called the police.
Tara.
Good job, Tara.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, I'm giving you a steel meal. A steel meal for future
Are we
years.
Ever going to be allowed to use them again? Or is this just... empty palimpsest.
It is the palimpsest of all palimpsests. Guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We dug up famous guys and ladies to discuss Clone High's Season 2 reboot before going around the dial with stops at Primo, Mrs. Davis, and Happy Valley. Tara's canon case from Glow's Freaky Tuesday was a full-body slam dunk. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner. Wait, Sarah. No, Tara was the winner of regulation. Sarah got a steel mill. That's what happened there. Thank you again, Mike, for that deranged game time. Next up, it's FUBAR on Extra Extra Hot Great. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Come on, Liza, ring them bells.
Sarah D. Bunting.
We're going super literal on this one, y'all.
And John Ramos.
Joan FK forever.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Okay, I'm gonna go.
Wow, is it tomorrow already? Bye!